Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Hey. Monday through Thursday here on WBAI 99.5 FM. There we go. Just had a little mishap. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you some ideas, concepts, a guest or two to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we are talking about birth order. What does that mean? Does that mean that you're deciding, I think I'll have two children, make one a man, make one a woman, that's your birth order. You think you just put that in? No. Birth order is about the position that a child is born in. What about you? Are you an only child? Were you the oldest child? Are you the oldest child in a family? Do you have are you a middle child? Second born, third born, fourth born? Are you the youngest child, the baby? All of these supposedly have an effect on you, the very position you were born in. And they have an effect on people who are around you. So if you are relating to someone who is an oldest born, or first born, or second born, there's a good chance by listening to this program that you'll be able to tell certain things about them and be able to work with them better. Because there are things you just understand about people who are in these positions. My co-host, Dr. Deborah Hillman, and I have been working on this for a little while, kind of finding the fascinating stuff. Lots of exceptions to it, of course. There are exceptions to the characters. If you have an inordinately difficult childhood, maybe it changes your position. But in an average childhood, there are certain things we could say about the only child, the firstborn child, and the second and thirdborn child. We're going to talk today about the second and thirdborn child. We're going to review what we know about the first and the only child in case you didn't tune in yesterday. Also, if you want this whole series, by the way, if you're somebody planning on having a family, you can always call my office and you can have the tapes from yesterday and tomorrow as well. Can't have them today because we didn't make the tape for tomorrow yesterday.
We're not going to do it today.
We're going to do it tomorrow. You know why there are so many Smiths in the telephone book? We finally figured it out. Because they all have phones. All right, let's get on to this. Listen, Deborah, we're talking about the birth order. Let's talk about the only child, okay? Just a review. What characteristics do we know about the only child?
Okay. The only child has a strong sense of privacy and is very sensitive to intrusion. So the only child develops what some have called two speeds for dealing with the problem of intrusion. On the one hand, this person is very quick to reject an intruder. And on the other, very, very slow to embrace a new friend or a supporter. And yet, they welcome a person wholeheartedly when they really want to let them in.
So let's talk about that now, because you see, a person grows up. And when they're growing up, it's this one person, the only child, and the parents, or one parent, okay? One parent or two parents, but it's a union. So they don't have other kids to emulate. So they become junior adults. And you can always tell an only child, or you can frequently tell an only child because they look very adult, even at an early age. They relate to adults. They talk like an adult because that's their frame of reference. They don't have other kids that they're relating to in the home. So they have this world. Now, how do you deal with being an only child when you have no playmates? What's it like? It must get lonely. Mom and Pop are all having a good time with each other. Or if you have single parents, they're out going out dating or doing whatever. You have to invent imaginary playmates. And in your imaginary world, you build a world of your own. And it's hard to invade this world. They don't let other children in the world too easily. So when we talk about intruders, we mean other influences in your life. For example, if you take an only child and you say to the only child, let's do something new. You say, hey, Mike, let's go run out and run in the woods naked. Mike's going to say, wait a minute. Now, that's not such a good idea. I'm not sure that's a good idea. I resist it. The immediate response is resistance, because it's kind of an intrusion into the privacy. And yet, on the other hand, if you try to love people who are the only child, it takes a long time to get that love established. They may welcome you in if you come in gently. And then when they finally let you in, the one thing is, once you get into their inner world, it could be an enormous relationship. It could be gigantic, because there's such depth to it. But that's the only child. Now, the only child for a while who becomes an adult, so therefore is this kind of perfectionistic. There are other characteristics of them. They tend to be, there tends to be a sense of anger somewhere around them, you know? There seems to be a critical part of them. They tend to be sarcastic. They are not too aware of what others think or feel. They're not too aware of it. They're kind of in their own world. They're organized, they're stable in general, and they just generally have a good sense of justice. You know, they believe that everyone should be treated equally, but they feel separate from the world. They feel like they are, you know, their own kind of product, which you can understand because there are no other children around.
Shall we go on to the firstborn?
Well, that's what happens. The only child becomes the firstborn child. When another child comes along, the only child is no longer an only child. Now it's a firstborn child. Now things change, because now this only child, who had a short stint at being the only child and therefore getting all of their parents' attention, now doesn't get all the parents' attention anymore. So something happens. So the only child has a bad kind of feeling that they've got to deal with. They've got to deal with the fact that all the attention was taken away. And they develop certain characteristics around this.
Well, what they try to do is trade love for attention that comes in the form of respect or admiration or approval.
From the parents.
From their parents.
Right. So yes. In other words, they want to get this respect and approval from their parents. So they're going to trade for that, right? And they're going to trade. They're going to do things. They're going to perform. Now, what better way to perform than to perform like the adults? So you become the carrier of their message, you see? Whereas the only child develops their own kind of ethic. They may develop their own kind of ethic in their private world. When you're the older child, you become like your parents. And it's amazing how much like your parents you can easily become. Because you're there, and sometimes your parents even assign you the role of being a surrogate parent to the younger children. See? So now the older child always kind of acts in this funny kind of way. They're removed. They're removed from the second child. They kind of have a disdain for the younger child. Because even though they may embrace it and like it and so on and so forth, they lost something. They lost their parents' full attention when this new kid came along. So there are many characteristics about the older child that are different than the only child. What are the characteristics are there of the firstborn?
Well, they have a tendency to feel guilt. They tend to be very placating. They like to cover up in order to maintain the peace.
Sure, and they want to cover up for their parents, too, because they want the approval. They don't want their parents to know how angry they are. They want this constant, I got to get the approval. The other interesting thing about firstborns, as they get older, they don't care about their peers' approvals. You know, what do their friends think? What do the other people their age think? They don't care so much about that. They care about the parental images. So if you were working for a company, you don't care what the other coworkers think, but you do care what the supervisors think and the bosses think, because that's going to be the source. Whereas many other people, they find their approval comes from their neighbors, from their friends, you know, that's important to them. Not so to a firstborn. A firstborn just simply says, only one person who counts, and that's mom and dad, or the symbolic mom or dad.
Another aspect is that their emotional expression tends to be somewhat flat. That's uh-huh. Because if you're too emotional, you can kind of get other people riled up, and they're trying not to do that. They have kind of a gnawing sense of lost love, because they did in effect lose their parents' love to another child. So really, that's what they're dealing with in all these different ways. They tend to fear that others will be offended by them.
Yeah, they're really worried about that, too, because, again, you know, their job is to maintain the status quo. They've got to keep things going, and they don't want to offend other people. They don't want to get things shaken up in any way. Well, this is what we covered yesterday, and there's much more about this available in the audio tapes from yesterday that we did on birth order and the only child and the older child. Now we're going to talk about the second born. The second born child is an interesting child, and I think a lot of you are going to find this really interesting because there seems to be a high number of second borns. Right, a higher number of second-borns than there are first-borns. That doesn't make sense, does it? There has to be at least as many first-borns as there are second-borns, doesn't there?
Yes, there does. But maybe not in the listening audience. We don't know.
Not listening to BAI, because the second-borns tend to become the rebels. These are the folks who say, hey, wait a minute, look at that firstborn. That firstborn up there has got everything perfect. They got mom and dad loves them. They look like mom and dad. They dress like mom and dad. They behave in ways that gets mom and dad's approval. I can't get approval the normal way. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get approval another way. And I'm going to do something else. I'm going to become an actor. I'm going to become a singer. I'm going to rebel. I'm going to find love by being unique because I can't possibly compete with that giant of an older child. On top of that, they believe that the older child and all symbolic authorities, for that sake, have the tendency to put them down and make less of them and make them feel inferior. So they have problems with authority frequently. So they're frequently fighting against the grain all the time. However, in that struggle to win the approval through these odd ways, it can become tremendously seductive. And they could become people who become very much out there in the world. As opposed to the only child, who tends to live in a very private world, or the firstborn, who has a very selective crowd of friends, the second child is the one who goes out and finds everybody, gets the company, really becomes much more gregarious, much more social.
Yeah, the second child often becomes a perfectionist and often feels that nobody really cares because the experience was that the older sibling didn't and that the parents were more attentive to the older sibling. So the second child tries to suppress feelings.
Tries to suppress them. But it's kind of difficult. But they're trying, and there's always a struggle of trying to push feelings down. But remember, you know, they have a tough role they're coming into. The second child, of course, now there's differences here. If the second child happens to be a boy and the first child was a girl, that leads to certain difficulties because then the second born becomes a firstborn because in the society the male is valued so much higher. But in general, the second born has a much more difficult task. They have a difficult task. They have to earn. And they can't earn just by competing straight. They got to find their own way of winning. So they drive, they tend to be people who do not follow the rules. They listen for mistakes in other people. They like to give advice. They like to play imitation adult a lot, but they look like imitation adults. Very often you'll see a second born who's giving advice to everybody. Now you see the first born doesn't give advice. It directs, but not too much. Remember, it doesn't really want this role of being the older child. It wants to be the only child. But the second born wants the role of being the older child. It wants to have nobody over it. So they're always acting like they're big shots. Not always. But very often you'll see them acting like they're bigger than they are, and they look like imitation adults. Now, this characteristic of the second born, this kind of almost, they're almost making believe. They very often are competing with their brothers and sisters. They might have a brother and sister who is in the field. Let's say one becomes a doctor. They'll become a doctor, but they won't become a regular doctor. They'll become a holistic doctor. And, if the older child is one particular thing in a profession, they'll compete with it in some kind of way, but do it in their own kind of way. There's much more that has been said about the rebellious nature of the second born, and it's an important thing because it's these rebels that have brought a lot of question to the power that be. In fact, I'm willing to bet that WBAI has a higher number of secondborns than they do firstborns listening to the program. Because the firstborns would be people who would be more likely to kind of hold up the status quo, protect the politic that be, you know? So firstborns tend to be, I am sure, more Republican than secondborns, who tend to be more rebellious. Wasn't there an article written about the secondborn?
This is kind of an interesting generalization about later borns, as he calls them. This is Frank Sulloway, a researcher, who makes a distinction between firstborns and then the later born children. He says because they, the later borns, can't use the advantage of greater physical size like their older siblings, later borns are more sociable, flexible, and democratic. Later borns also use a sense of humor as a way of getting attention. It's interesting that later borns are more likely to become comedians, while firstborns are more likely to become dramatic actors.
I think that's an interesting distinction because it's one of the things you see about firstborns, right, and only children. Well, not only children. Only children can develop a very rich sense of humor and a very creative self, you know? Because remember, they're alone. And they're in their own world, and they could develop a great amount of creativity in that private world. Creativity could save them. I'm thinking of a few people I know who are only children. They're not really only children, but they became only children in a family. They were just so isolated, or they isolated themselves, and they're very creative. But the firstborn tends not to be creative because the firstborn's creativity is not nurtured because they are imitating the parents. They're living a world of trying to be following a rule, trying to follow a prescription, trying to get the approval of their parent or parents. If you're an only child, the main question we have of you is mom or dad pleased with who you've become? And you're going to find that if I ask you that question, if you're an only child listening now, not an only child, if you're an older child listening, and I said to you, do you think your mom and dad would be proud of you right now? The very question would strike to your heart. It would strike you. You'd say, oh, boy, that's an important question. And as you thought about it, you'd feel a chill go down your spine. Or if you said that to a secondborn or even to an only child, it wouldn't have as great an impact. Armand DeMille here with Dr. Deborah Hillman, talking about some of the personality characteristics of the different birth positions that you might have. We're teaching psychology because that's what we do. We are both psychotherapists. We're both here. We've both had a lot of experience in the field. Dr. Deborah Hillman has had significant research in both psychology and anthropology. We kind of bring you some of these ideas so that you can understand them and maybe live a more positively minded life by having more understanding. The more understanding you have, the more love you have. The easier it is not to judge and be critical of other people. So we're going to take your calls in just a couple of minutes. Here's a little more about the second child. What makes the second child the rebel is that often he or she will feel robbed. See, at one point, the second child is the baby. Now, then a thing happens. They could be the baby, and they could at least get they're the baby. But now if a third child is born, they're robbed out of the first child position. Now they're robbed out of the baby position. And they get mad. They get angry. And this anger kind of stays with them. And they have to fight for attention. And this kind of attention and jealousy, is if you're a middle child, second born, it's going to mean that you're going to have to be fighting your whole life. Or they're not. Oh, of course, you don't have to be. Now, let's take a look at what happens when only children get together with second children. Got that? Now, imagine a marriage or a mating game. And let's say that your partner is an only child, right? And you are a second child. Or imagine you're an only and your partner is... No, I just said that. Imagine if you're a second child and your partner is an only child. In the only second, the most common marital relationship is the only child with a second child. It has a very high rate of success. As an only child, you find the second child's tendency to be reliable and loyal very rewarding. you may get used to constructive criticism, which a second child is usually ready to give. Second-born are usually critical. But instead of getting compliments, you'll get suggestions for improvements, which second children like to give because, as we said before, they are imitating these adults by giving advice a lot. It starts with a mutual attraction, with the second-born being attracted to the only child's free expression of emotion, because remember, they tend to be their own kind of person. It could be irritating in a marriage. They are talkative, and the only child also has a tendency to organize things, which to the second child, who's a rebel, is a very big rewarding factor. So they get along well. The relationship is usually compatible unless there's other issues which can cause problems. These relationships tend to endure. So an only child with a second child, they kind of get along. Now let's say a second child with a first child. A second born with a first born. Boy, that sounds like trouble right off the bat, doesn't it? Now, the firstborn with a secondborn, it's a relationship that seems to be rare because firstborns tend to find secondborns to be scary. See, now, in a relationship, the firstborn child tends to be at the mercy of the secondborn psychologically. You may feel the need to be cautious around the secondborn for fear of offending them. So the firstborn's a little always worried about the secondborn's rebelliousness and their anger. The firstborn is also afraid of their own anger, which tends to creep up a lot and gets triggered by the secondborn. So they rarely get together. However, because of the scariness of the secondborn, the firstborn is very often attracted to them. And this is one of those classic relationships where you see somebody who is very organized, orderly, gets together with somebody who's very artistic and passionate. You know, which could be the second born. So when you get that mixture, it's that they're attracted to the scariness of the other person. All of this, of course, is theory, and only theory, but you might find something in it useful for you. And we're going to take a few calls right now because I'm sure you have something to say about it. The second born, the first born, the only child. That's what we're covering so far. A little later today, when we come back after our break, we're going to be talking about the third born. And then tomorrow, we'll talk about some of the other manifestations in families. Hope you're finding this as interesting as I did through my entire life. My adult life, it's been something that I've studied because I've used it a lot for my education. This was my specialty in school, in undergraduate school and in graduate school. And the research that's just continued on it kind of proves the point that it's good. It's kind of a good framework, but not always accurate. There are so many things that could change it. In our world today, where many people change, where parents just suddenly could get divorced as quickly as they, you know, more quickly than they did before, suddenly you could be the oldest, and then your mother gets divorced, takes you with her, and marries a man who's got four children who are all older than you. How about that? Where does that put you? What does that make you? Does that make you an only child? Does that make you a fifth child? And those kind of confusions, which I received a lot on the Internet, by the way, a lot of people had written to me about their reaction to our program, talking about the complications as they got shifted around from family to family. So you could be the only child you could be first the older child. Picture this. And then you're the older child with a younger brother, and your parents get divorced. And then your younger brother goes with dad, and you go with your mom. Now you've gone from being the firstborn to being the only child. And let's say you spend a year or two as the only child. That becomes real special. Then your mom gets married to a man who's got three children who are older than you. Now you become the youngest child, the baby. How does that happen? How does that affect you? What does that do to your mind?
Well, the theory is that by the age of 5 or 6, the basic psychological pattern has set in. So a lot of this depends on the timing of all of these upheavals and changes, too.
Yeah, you know, I disagree with that theory only for one point, because around pubescence, when a lot of shifts take place when children are around pubescence, it's real dramatic. When you are a man coming into pubescence or a woman coming into pubescence, you're at a very tender age and you're very impressionable. Things that happen to people at pubescence can really shape their adulthood.
I not only agree with you, but think that there are some stages even later in life where significant shifts can occur, but where that would be out of the realm of child position, birth order position. But
I think
psychological changes occur at many stages of life.
Oh, I am sure there are major changes that take place when you're with every birthday that you have. I am prepared.
All right. Speaking there, all right, talk about picking up
Michael's birthday,
cue.
Right?
No, we're not only talking about and honoring the matter of birth order here, but we have a birthday coming up, an actual birthday.
Nah.
Yeah, whose could that be? Everybody out there probably knows what I'm talking about by now. It's Armand's birthday on Sunday, so we're talking about birth order, and we are moving toward the celebration of a very important birthday.
Thanks, Deborah. Armand DeMille here with you. Pisces with Aries rising. Moon, Mars, and Venus all in Taurus. How's that for perfect?
Sorry for leaving out the details, but at least they're out.
One last thing about the second child before we go. And I'm sorry, we'll take our calls as soon as we get back. We're not going to take our calls before the break. The second born has this kind of feeling that there's a pacemaker out there. There's a person, someone always ahead, who's setting the pace for you. So you become more competitive. You want to overthrow the older child. And that, for that reason, you know, you can become a rebel. You try to outdo everyone. But this sense of rivalry and rebelliousness, you could find. And whenever you meet a rebel, find out from them. You have an older brother, an older sister. And you'll find more often than not that they do. They do. When you find the real active rebels, the ones who are always criticizing someone, putting other people down, you know, competing but not competing in the normal way. Very frequently, these will be the therapists who don't want to go to school. The people who don't want to, you know, spend the time in the educational system. They'll be critical of the educational system. So it seems like the people who do well in the educational system are the firstborns and the latterborns, and the secondborns have to tend to have more of a problem. Armand DeMille with you. Hope this stuff isn't just too intellectual for you. Hope you can get some use for it. I'm sure you do. It's plenty of information, so I want to slow your brain down. And maybe get you away from all of this and say, oh boy, honey, I have to consider all this stuff, all this stuff that we have in our mind, you got to think of in one form or another. My boss, he's an only child. What does that teach me about it? My husband's an only, he's a firstborn. How does that affect me? What am I going to do with my children? Should I have only one child? Should I have more children? Life gets so complicated. And I believe there's a simpler pace for life. I think there's a place where you could just kind of relax it all and lay back and just say, okay, let's just be instead of becoming. Let's not just figure it out. Is it all about the brain and where it comes from? So I bring you something from Paul Gonzalez to help you spend the next few minutes. Just kick up your feet. Put them up there on the desk somewhere or on your chair. Sit back. Relax. Take it easy. Let yourself unfurl. Thank you. Sweden. You're listening to Paul Gonzalez. Do Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and I know that everybody's going to be asking, where did it come from? It's something that I got a long time ago, so I don't know where you can get it. Just look for the name. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Armand DeMille, Deborah Hillman, with you with the Positive Mind, bringing you some stuff about childbirth, about being, what position you were in. What baggage you came in with? Were you an only child? Were you a younger child? Were you a middle child? Let's take some of your calls. Come on, this is your show, 209-2900. If you've missed this today, the telephone number here is 212-209-2800?
2900.
209 what, Deborah?
2900.
I got you. 209-2900. We're going to take some of your calls. Armand DeMille here. You know, it's just kind of, hey, what do you call a cheese that doesn't belong to you? It's called nacho cheese. Hi there. You're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
How you doing, Armand?
Yes. Hi there.
Hi. I heard part of your first program yesterday, but I wasn't able to call.
Uh-huh.
I was just wondering. I'm like kind of confused because I think I'm an only child, but I have a sister. Because, I was born first, and my parents had my sister when I was 13.
Now, that's a big difference. The rule of thumb. I like that. Who is thumb?
No, that's that. Do you know what that expression
means? Yeah, I do. Where did it come from, the rule of thumb?
It was a medieval rule that you couldn't beat, men could not beat their wives with a stick that was any thicker than the width of the thumb.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
I'm not going to use that rule of thumb anymore.
Yes, it's a good idea to be aware of where that expression comes from.
All right. The rule of the house is that if the child is within 7 years of your birth, right, it seems to have little effect on the older child. However, the younger child is affected by it because she has this predecessor, you know, that she has to deal with. But so that leaves you more, in theory, as an older child, unless at age 13 you were instructed to take care of the younger child.
In fact, my mother didn't even tell me that. Like, you know, she waited this long so she have a built-in babysitter, which
and
I kind of took great offense to. I mean, I love my sister, but not for nothing, I felt like more like her surrogate father than her sister. Her brother.
I see, so it gets real confused. So they're your only child status. Now, look at this. Here's what we said. The only child has this kind of condition of resisting invasion because they have this sense of privacy. And then suddenly at 13 years old, this is what I meant, Deborah, about how things get affected around pubescence.
Yes.
Around pubescence, around the time when you're coming into your maleness, right?
Yes. I wanted to do my own thing, but I had to always babysit or take care of her. And I mean, I actually feel like she was my daughter.
Yeah, and this is the time when your sexuality was emerging. Do you remember having your first erection?
Oh yeah.
Right now
but that was like before though.
Okay, that's a little before, right? It's a little before. So you're becoming sexually alive, which is natural, and that happens, and you're suddenly feeling like, a man child. You're suddenly saying,
I felt like mature and adolescent at the same time, And I mean, I felt like she was looking up to me as a father and I kind of resented her, but I liked her also, but it's so confusing.
It sure is. And it's one of those things that become really difficult to deal with. So you don't know what your role is. And so, like you said, you get angry and you find yourself angry. You love her, but you're angry. What a thing to happen to you.
I mean, I feel like I kind of keep it under wraps because I don't really, it's not her fault, but, I don't relate to her as a sister,
Mm-hmm.
I relate more of her like a, a daughter.
You relate more to her like a father.
Say again?
You relate more to her like a father, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, not an easy thing to do,
My father was still around, he helped and all that, but I felt like I was the second father. As opposed to the brother. I mean, even though my mother, I told my feelings to my mom, and she said, "Oh no, don't be silly," But I still felt that way. I mean, I had to babysit, I felt like I had to take care of her, And in a way, it's good because I realized how hard it is to take care of a child, and I guess that's why I'm 30 with no kids.
Yeah, right. That's what I was thinking.
You know, that was like practice.
In a way, it may not have been good, because you might have gotten sick of the idea of what it is to take care of a child. You know, you're somebody who's waiting to become a child. You're waiting for someone who wants to be the child, you know, not have a child.
Yeah, I mean, I remember feeling like, you know, I feel like I'm 40 and 3 at the same time, you know, like, mature before my time and still acting like a kid before my time, you know. I mean, even today, like, you know. I feel like sometimes I'm 30 years old, but sometimes I feel like I'm 50, or sometimes I feel like I'm 12.
So that's interesting with all of the difference in the roles that were kind of thrust on you. But I tell you, you sound like a man who's been asking a lot of questions about himself. And the fact that you're asking questions about yourself, and the fact that you even make this call to ask questions about yourself, means that your voyage is going to have some outcome, you know? You're going to find yourself somewhere down the road. And it's important. There's a piece of work we did here a while back called The Drama of the Gifted Child, which is about, pretty much about the plight that you lived with. And if you ever feel like checking it a little further and inquiring a little further, you might call and get those audio tapes. They're very good because they kind of teach you in that role.
What's the number?
The number in my office is 212-757-4488. 212-757-4488. But you really sound like you're doing a job for yourself, and I'm proud of you. I'm so glad you're asking the questions, you know? So keep that child alive inside of you. It's going to get a chance to play.
All right, thanks a lot.
Sure. 209-2900, Armand Mill. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello, Armand?
Yes.
Hi, happy birthday.
Thank you very much. You started it, Deborah. I knew you were going to start this.
Yes.
You started it, right?
Yes.
Here we go, my email. All right, my email address is armand@brainlink.com. But armand@brainlink.com, that's it. So if you ever want to send me an email, if you want to ever want to send a response about the radio program, about suggestions you have, things you might want to say, feel free to send me email. I read it all myself, believe it or not. Takes me ages to get through it, but I try to respond to each and every one. While we're talking about responsiveness, there's somebody on the phone right now who's waiting for me to stop talking. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi there.
Just listening to your description about only children and first child and second child, and it's amazing because I find that you practically describe myself. I'm a family of two girls, and I'm the oldest, and I'm in a relationship right now with an only child, and you've described my boyfriend, who's the only child, almost to a T, myself and my sister, who's the second child.
You're the firstborn.
Yes, I'm firstborn.
And he's the only child.
Right.
Right? And is it hard getting through his privacy?
Very much. Oh. As a matter of fact, right now we have decided to take a couple of days and just evaluate our relationship.
My gosh, I understand. I'm sorry to hear that. That must be painful.
It is. But I think it's probably for the best, but I'm finding
well, pain
hard.
is never for the best. I mean, I never understand that theory of no pain, no gain. But you do have something here where you're working with it. So my heart goes out to you. It's tough. It's tough trying to get relationships, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough with only children because they are difficult. You could pound at their walls all you want. They've got steel up there that says, stay out of my heart unless I invite you in. And if I invite you in, take off your slippers. Don't you walk into my house unless you've got bare feet, because I don't want to hear you tread lightly on me. You got to learn a way to love them. They're difficult to love. However, when you do get in there all the way, they're some of the most faithful, deepest lovers you'll ever meet.
I believe it.
You know?
He's that type of person.
But what does he do that makes you feel like you're not valued?
What did he do?
What does he do most that makes you feel like you're not important?
For example, right now, we both are going through problems. I'm going through problems with my own family, and he has issues with. He's starting a new career, and we've been so focused on our own problems. And I felt that I was trying to help him with his, I'd listen to him, and I would try to be supportive. But he has been telling me that he feels overwhelmed listening to my problems while dealing with his own.
So he must have been really close to his mother, was he?
No, actually, as a matter of fact, he has problems with his mother.
What kind of problems?
He doesn't get along with her.
Why?
He has a very short temper with her.
He has a short temper. Does she tend to burden him with things?
I don't think burden, but he finds that she knows what annoys him, and she does it anyway.
Boy, it's kind of tough parenting to have, huh?
Yeah.
It's kind of a tough model of love to have behind you. Listen, you two poor cookies, pardon the expression, but as I get older, I feel like, you know, everybody's down there somewhere in the child world. You two poor kids, or young people, or people, I wish you would find some way of finding peace if it were possible. And you know what might be good? It might be good to call in an outside person, like a consultant,
mm-hmm.
You know? Just might. You think you'd be willing to do that?
You might.
You know, it's like, that might not be such a bad idea at this point, instead of just, you know, separating from each other and hoping for the best.
Right.
You know, if you need to find somebody, give my office a call, and either Deborah or I will find somebody for you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Lots of luck to you.
Thank you.
Right. 209-2900, Armand DeMille here talking about birth. Well, it hurts me so much. I feel so sad sometimes when I hear people going through pain like that. Pains of relationships are so difficult. So difficult. And they're so private. Nobody really wants to hear about all this angst that you have. You know, you talk about, well, he said, she said, you know what he said to me? And then people give you advice. They don't know. Relationships are difficult, my friends. Relationships are difficult because it demands of you to open your heart and become vulnerable. And then on top of that, to become vulnerable and be fighting off all your history of all the pain you've received before. It's not easy to love. Not easy to love. But we're trying to learn as much as we can, and I think with using all the tools we have, consciousness, awareness, education, we have a better shot at it than anybody before us. In the old days, before people learned anything about consciousness or the human mind, they would just give up and go numb. And you'd have these relationships of people living with each other separately, but numb. Nowadays, it's different. The demands are different. People are saying, I'd like to be happy, and if I can't be happy, I'd rather be alone or find somebody else. 209-2900 is our number. Armand DeMille, hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, I'm on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, I'm on. My name is Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
And I'm the only child, but I was adopted, and I'm married to a woman who is the second child, and she had to, you described it to a T, where she had to take charge of the family, kind of.
Yep.
So, I mean, we have all kinds of problems because of it. You know, like, I'm very private, and she's always giving advice, and I'm just the opposite. You know,
it's kind of amazing, isn't it, that it gets so predictable? So here I am saying it on the air, and you're saying, oh, my gosh, there it is.
Well, that's why I called, because I said, this is it exactly, and I couldn't figure out what it was, and I thought it was personal, but I said, it's not personal, it's just, you know, all these other things that are involved in it while I was listening.
You know, that's exactly why it's valuable to look into psychology a little bit and understand people's different ways of being in the world, because you do take things less personally when you see those differences.
Yeah, and you see that the battle's not with you. You see, your battle of privacy comes from the fact that you had to make up your own world.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it did.
And it's not just with her. You've got a privacy. You even got to protect yourself against your parents, because they could be overprotective and stuff. So you've got to build a little wall against everybody so that you could determine your own life. And so this is not you against her. It's you against the world. And then she, on the other hand, has got to rebel and find she's got to give advice. She's got to do her imitation adult stuff. She got to do her beat her older brother or older sister out stuff, and she does it on you. But it's not you. She's doing it with all of the world and the entire life. There's another thing about being an adopted child, is that the child can be, the parents can be so thankful to have you that they could spoil you. Did you have that happen?
Oh, 100%. You know, I'm told that all the time.
That you're,
as an adult, it's, you know, it's not attractive.
Yeah, and that they may try to compensate for your loss of your biological parents by being extra good parents and extra nice to you and smothering you in many ways.
That's exactly what happened.
And so that you could become easily on the other side, very demanding. But let me ask you something. What was your feeling about your original biological parents?
Well, at first I didn't know who they were, but after my adopted mother died, I got a call saying I had another family, and I looked them up, and it was a weird, it was strange to talk with them, and I was nervous the first time, and she was very nervous, so I didn't ask a lot of hard questions. I was just happy to see someone that I looked like, and then down the road, I lost track of where they were. They moved around a lot, and I lost track of them. I never really got to ask any, you know, like serious questions.
But you did meet your mom?
Yeah, I did meet her.
Wow. What did she look like?
I look more like my father than her, but there was, you see the resemblance in the other kids that were there. She had four kids, and she couldn't take care of all of them, so I was one that she gave up. I was the second born.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had a good life growing up and all.
Sure, from the adopted parents.
But it was interesting to see her, and, you know, she was very nervous. And she had other problems, you know.
Wow, what a confusion that must leave a child with.
Oh, man. I'm working on it now. I'm going to therapy.
Yeah, God bless. I think that's such an amazing thing that you're out there recovering yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I'm 45 and I'm recovering. I'm just trying to figure this thing out now.
Well, good. And I understand that. And, of course, your wife, you said it was your wife or your girlfriend you talked about.
My wife.
Your wife is going to have a hard time understanding it, you know, understanding what depth of recovery has to be done for both of you. So it's good to involve her in the process in some way. I wish you luck.
Yeah.
I wish you luck. I hear the tough times.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
209. Well, before we take another call, I'm sorry to the other callers. I do want to get on to the third born, Deborah, you know? So now look at this. Here comes the second born. We have the only child, right, who thinks they're an only child for a while. Then suddenly another child is born, the second born. And so now the only child becomes... The only child becomes a firstborn. In other words, they're now the oldest child, but they're no longer the only child. So they deal with that. The secondborn comes along, and they've got to deal with this younger child. The secondborn is got two things going for them. They are on one level, they're competing. On one level, they're trying to be as good as the older. But on another level, they have the advantage of being the baby. And they get the advantage of being the young one, so people take care of them, so the youngest child has has a lot of mothers and fathers, people around who are taking care of them, older people who want to try to educate them, you know, and they've got this special kind of thing. And as the youngest, they want to be bigger than the others. They have used plenty. They can stay the baby forever. It's kind of a nice position until the thing happens. Isn't that well said? Until the thing happens.
I don't think you need this special effect button here. You don't need
right,
it.
Well, I forgot about the special effect button.
Yes.
Until the thing happens, the other baby is born. A new baby, the second born, becomes the middle child. What a loss of identity that is. Now there's the youngest that comes along. What an effect that has on the second. There's one underneath, and there's one on top. So the second born is truly traumatized by the birth of the third born. There is some positive stuff to it, because the second born now has somebody they could be on top of. So they tend to find revenge. You know, they tend to get even by dominating and playing adult to this third child. But the third born has some real problems.
Well, the third born experiences all of this as a kind of persecution sometimes by the second born. And so the third born becomes very vulnerable, feels very vulnerable, and copes with the vulnerability by trying to be strong and either succeeding at that and becoming fearless or failing at that and becoming very fearful.
Now, that's very important. A third born can easily become one of two. They're either going to fight the superstructure. They're going to fight the fact that they got two older children that they've got to beat in some form or other, and they attack. and they either win or they lose. But if they lose in that attack, if they can't succeed, they become extraordinarily vulnerable and they become weakened. Now, this added to the fact that they're the baby, they tend to get treated like babies. So now the vulnerability becomes their strength, and their weakness becomes their strength. And so now there's no encouragement for them to become strong, because now their weakness is the very strength, because they're treated as the babies. Their handicap is what works for them. So it's very difficult. Now, they could either become very rebellious and try, just like the second one, to find their own form of getting ahead, but they're really fighting uphill the whole way. And they tend to get real angry at times. They're always looking to rescue other people so that they could feel important.
I think it's also a bit of, it's projection too, because if they feel persecuted, then they want to try to take care of other people who they perceive to be victims. They also tend to be pleasers. I mean, that sounds in a way contradictory to what you were saying about them, but that's kind of a way to disarm another person, and so they have a very nurturing side.
The nurturing protective side is a very important side, because now, even in their weakness as nurturers, as people who could take care of other people, they could become nurses, they could become people who aid people, you know? They can become people who are there in the service of other people, and it is their service that works. They can become police officers, they can become animal workers, they can do child care. They become important in their own kind of taking care of way. They tend to be there for other folks. They want to help others. It gives them a sense of identity, because a sense of identity is very hard for them to get. They don't have to have a sense of boundaries either. They tend to feel like they could kind of move into any area, because they're kind of amorphous, you see. They don't have a real self that's defined. It's not an easy place to be. The third one could be the worst. However, being the baby does have its advantages. It does mean certain people, you'll have many mothers, you'll have many fathers, you'll have many people taking care of you. And if you have kindly older siblings, if they're kindly, if they feel okay in their own mind, if they received enough nurturing from their own parents, they'll be kind with you. You could make it. You can make it through, but it's a difficult position. Now, thirdborns we're going to talk about just the thirdborns and how they relate to the others in marriages. It's real, well, you know, I think we're going to hold that for tomorrow.
There's one interesting fact about friends, thirdborns and friends, that I came across, that they often have only one close friend, and I thought that was interesting.
Oh, that is interesting.
You can kind of make sense of it in light of the other characteristics, that if you have just one friend, you've certainly embraced someone as a protector, but you've also, I think, shown that you're kind of vulnerable. You're not going to, I think there's a kind of a trust issue there, a certain ambivalence about trusting.
But they tend to be very charged emotionally. You know, it's a wonderful thing that they're emotionally filled, because, again, if emotions are equated with weakness, and you allow yourself, and vulnerability is the only place where you can hang out as a thirdborn successfully, so then you become emotional. Emotional becomes okay. The emotional thirdborn is different than the secondborn, because the secondborn is rebellious and manifests a lot of anger. But the thirdborn's emotionality becomes, in effect, a strength, and becomes very attractive to people who don't have that many emotions. Armand DeMille here with Dr. Deborah Hillman. It is just so much stuff that we would love to give you and keep giving you and telling you about, stuff that you could learn just to make your life a little better. We'll be back tomorrow. If you want a copy of today's program, the telephone number here is 212-757-4488. This is Armand DeMille. Be back with you with Deborah Hillman tomorrow.